Welcome to I Feel Your Pain, where stories of loss meet sacred solidarity. A space for storytelling, testimony, lament, and healing. My name is Tina Norbury, a communication strategist by training, a grief navigator by lived experience. You find yourself here today because your pain has a name, a date, a memory that weighs more than you can handle alone. For me, it is the 2nd of August. Amputated dreams, the marriage crucible. What happens when, for better or worse, in sickness and in health becomes your devastating reality? Today, in this episode, we will enter the fire of a marriage tested by catastrophic illness, countless surgeries, and the loss of a dreamed-for future. This is the story of how grief and unimaginable stress turned inward, creating a chasm between two people who loved God and each other deeply. We will hold on to the scriptural truth of a three-strand cord and find solidarity in the practical steps to communicate and seek help when the weight is too heavy to carry alone. Our marriage was built on what we thought was unshakable ground: biblical principles, spirit-led life, prayer. We did everything together. God was not just a part of our marriage, He was the center. We did not do anything without consulting God. My husband was a prayer warrior, a formidable man of faith. He would not take God for granted. He would not take scripture for granted. He breathed scripture. He lived scripture. He ministered. He went out there in the community to evangelize. He always had a Bible in his car, in his pocket, wherever he was. The first 1.5 years were just so beautiful. It was a season of abundance for us. I'm talking about love, joy, and our business is booming. It was so beautiful that it almost made me forget the tender grief of losing my parents. My husband's love covered all the pain. I felt warm inside. I was loved, and I loved back. But barely 2 years into that marriage, everything changed drastically. I remember sitting in front of our beautiful fireplace on a cold winter night, waiting for my husband to come home. He had been out that day with our workers and my 11-year-old cousin, who he adored so much. He was saying he was teaching him to be a businessman. We used to travel together all the time, but on that specific day, there were other errands I needed to run, so I stayed at home. When he arrived, he seemed a bit off. He looked pale. He said to me he was feeling extremely tired. I just put it down to the grief of losing his mother. That was about 2 months prior to this. He sat next to me on the sofa near the fireplace. He barely touched his food. He only had about 2 mouthfuls. We cuddled each other in front of the fire. Then it tried to say something, and the speech was slurred. I didn't know anything about a stroke. He then tried to get up, and he couldn't do anything. I called the workers to help me to take him to our bedroom and got him on the bed, then rang our family doctor, who came immediately. My little cousin was telling me at this point that he had been struggling to drive home that night, but because he kept on stalling the engine, but he persevered until he got home. So by the sound of it, it looks like the stroke was already on the onset and he didn't know. But thank God he managed to get home. At this point, he couldn't speak, he couldn't move, he couldn't do anything. The diagnosis was a clot on his left hemisphere of the brain. This is the side that controls the right side of the body. So it means that the right side of the body was totally paralyzed, and it affected his speech as well. At that point, our world began to spin very fast and violently like a whirlwind. It seemed and felt like the odds were stacked against us. So picture this. This man now needs urgent surgery to remove the clot from his brain. And in my hometown of Bulawayo, Zimbabwe, the second largest city in Zimbabwe, there was no neurosurgeon. The only neurosurgeon at that time was in Harare, the capital city of Zimbabwe. However, for some reason, that neurosurgeon was on his annual leave, and he was out of the country for the whole month. We did not have a whole month to wait. Those 6 days with my husband in hospital were just turmoil. I refused to leave his bedside. Most days, sometimes some relatives dragged me to go home and have a bit of a nap. I was crying. I was praying. I was just trying to figure out how to get him to South Africa. It was just so traumatic. I remember vividly praying this prayer on his bedside. I said, God, I'm not ready to be a widow. I will not be able to handle this. I ask you to heal my husband supernaturally or through doctors. I just want my husband back. Medical air rescue services, the MAS aircraft, came to our rescue. They airlifted us to Sunning Hill Hospital in South Africa. But something happened mid-flight. His vitals began to crash. I let out a desperate cry. I said, Peter, don't do this to me. Why are you doing this to me? The MAS aircraft ambulance people crew were very good at their job. They did what they needed to do, as at the same time trying to comfort me. God answered my prayer. The surgery was a success, but it was the beginning of a long road of loss. He had to learn everything again. To speak, to walk, strangely enough, or by God's grace, I would say, within 3 months, he had fully recovered. He went back to driving. He adjusted into his new normal. I suppose we both adjusted into the new normal. Only for arterial thrombosis to strike just 2 years after the stroke. This is a person who was back to driving, back to running businesses. We had sort of accepted where we were. Arterial thrombosis meant that he had to be amputated below the knee. We rushed again to South Africa, and a month after we arrived back in Zimbabwe, he had septicemia. That now forced us to travel to the United Kingdom, because at this point he was just looking so dreadful. My husband was a very strong man. You could never tell when he was in pain or something was worrying him. He was really a brave man. But I used to hear him at nighttime. He will scream and cry from the pain, from the amputation. He would cry. Anyway, remember or bear in mind that I do not have any nursing background at all. But I had to be quickly taught how to administer morphine and heparin injections to enable us to fly to the UK for the race for his life. It was the longest journey. We got to the UK, they amputated again, this time above the knee. But that at least saved the pain. It means that he was out of danger now. He had to learn to live with one leg. The businesses we had built had to be closed. Our dream life was gone. We were in the UK not by choice, but by circumstances. The stress wasn't about what we would eat, because financially, I would say, by worldly standards, we were still secure. We did not lack anything God provided. But things had changed. This is not what I signed up for. I was now his carer, not just his wife. The romantic partnership felt like it was buried under trauma, fear, and maybe silently shared and unspoken grief for the life we had just seen being amputated. We were together, but the stress had pulled us into separate silent orbits. The cord that bound us was fraying. Difficult time, things moved just very fast for us. I have told you my story. Now let's move on to our anchoring scripture, the cord that would not break. In the midst of this isolation, this emotional turmoil, one scripture became a lifeline for us. It was the truth that we had to choose to believe, even when we could not feel it. I will read the scripture from the NIV version of the Bible. It's Ecclesiastes 4, verse 9 to 12. It says, "Two are better than one, because they have a good reward for their labor. For if they fall, one will lift up his companion. But woe to him who is alone when he falls, for he has no one to help him up. Again, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one be warm alone? Though one may be overpowered by another, two can withstand him, and a threefold cord is not quickly broken. For a very long time, I only saw the brokenness of the first two strands, which was my husband and I. We were both falling down. How could we help each other? We were both cold. We were grieving. We were broken. How could we keep each other warm? Our hearts were stone cold. We were just broken. The enemy whispered louder, louder and louder. He kept on saying to us, the cord has been snapped. You don't have anything holding you together. But God reminded us that the strength was never in the two strands alone. The third strand, who is God through Jesus Christ, was woven tightly into the fibers of our marriage. We should have remembered that. He was the unbreakable one. The only one job we were supposed to do was to manufacture strength we didn't have. We needed to lean into the strength of this third strand. He would hold us together even when we felt miles apart. He was the defender when we were overpowered by grief and fear. The truth did not fix everything overnight. I can assure you that. Doesn't happen overnight. But for us, it gave us that flicker of hope to hold on to. Just that slight flicker of hope to hold on to. In solidarity, I'm going to share what I learned in the fire. How to find your way back to each other. If you are in a crucible right now, feeling the heat and pressure threatening to break your relationship, you know what? I see you and I feel your pain. Here are the four lessons I will leave you with today from my experience. Number one, name the elephant in the room. I'm talking about the distance, the resentment, the fear. Say it out aloud. This is hard. It's hard because this is just new to all of you or the pair of you. Acknowledge that now there's a distance between you and say, I miss us. Tell your spouse. It's okay to acknowledge fear and say, I am scared. We had to acknowledge that we were grieving two different things. He was grieving his body and his independence. I was grieving my husband, our dreams, our romantic partnership. It was what I was grieving for. I found that giving it a name breaks, or rather robs it of its power over you. Number two, seek professional help. For us, it took a very long time to seek professional help. We ended up going to Christian counseling, but it took a very long time for us to both agree to doing that. I think it was stubbornness from both sides, or rather, maybe just brokenness. We were broken, we're grieving. We noticed that we needed a neutral, godly third party to help us untangle this grief from our communication, because we weren't communicating, we were grieving. I find a counselor isn't a sign of failing or that you have failed. I see them as a mechanic for your marriage when it's just broken down. They give you the tools to talk and listen when you're too hurt to do it on your own. Number three, we had to redefine togetherness. What is your now togetherness? Date nights looked different. Praying together looked different. Quite loads of things looked different. It wasn't about recreating the past memories or the past what we had, but it was finding new ways to connect in the present. Sometimes we would just sit in silence together, just holding hands. And that was enough to remind us that we were on the same team. The fourth one is clinging to the third strand. Pray for your spouse, even when you don't feel like it. Pray that God will minister to them when you cannot. Sometimes it's difficult to minister to each other when you're both broken. Think of your marriage as a triangle with God at the top and you both at the bottom. As you both move closer to Him at the top, you will inevitably move closer to each other. You are not alone in this struggle. The cord of three strands is stronger than any crisis. Hold on and remember, even in brokenness, there is perfect peace to be found. As we close, I leave you with three things. One, listen deeply to your pain. It is a language God understands. Number two, lead clearly through your grief, because your scars light paths for others. Number three, communicate with care, especially to the hurting soul in your mirror. Until next time, your pain is safe here.